the ability to get on your hands and knees and have that eye-to-eye contact from a foundation point of view, we kind of, as we go up, we lose the ability to play. You know, I'd forgotten how to build a camp, but I knew dad's, you know, you'd see your mates doing it and go, that's really, really good, and I want to know how to do it. So it's like, you come here, I'll show you how to do it. You show me how to do that. Bill over there is really good. He's an engineer, so he's going to show us how to do some really, you know, kick-ass Lego. And if everybody throws something into that tribe melting pot, then suddenly you've all got your own skills and you're making friends and the kids are making friends.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dads show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you and impact your life. If you're an existing listener, then thanks for supporting the show on a weekly basis, and I really appreciate you getting behind what I do with Guild of Dads. If you're a new listener, thanks for discovering us, and hopefully the conversations that you hear on this podcast resonate. Feel free to listen back to some of the previous episodes and follow us across social media, which is Instagram and Facebook, along with joining the free Guild of Dads Facebook group. I appreciate all you guys for tuning in and getting behind the podcast, and what you do spurs me on, motivates me and inspires me to forge ahead with Guild of Dads and help as many dads as I can through the conversations and resources uncovered by those conversations. At Guild of Dads, my aim is to help dads sort their lives out, and I do this through the podcast and content that will expand what you think is possible for yourself, enabling you to make the maximum impact on yourself and others in all areas of your life. We have fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs and ultra-athletes, professors, psychologists, also some ordinary dads just like you doing some extraordinary and impactful things. We'll give you actionable resources to take away. I want to have conversations with men and dads and experts to transfer practical knowledge, insight and expertise that you can apply to improve your physical health, mental health, relationships, career and the way in which you show up to the world as a role model to the next generation. And these conversations are important right now because the world is shifting so fast, and getting clarity on this stuff means you can make an impact on yourself and those around you. On today's episode, I talk about the subject of social isolation in dads. It often seems like everyone is around us, dads, but in actual fact, we are more lonely than we care to admit. And as roles have changed for dads over the years, many are getting more involved, but are met with resistance. Mums will often have their social circle via the mums network, but for dads, it's more difficult. This is compounded by the fact that dads interact differently to mums and the activities they are into. And that's what we unpack on today's episode. I'm joined by founder of Dadless Soul, relationship builder, social entrepreneur, writer and part-time revolutionary, Dan Flanagan. Dan first discovered the perils of having nobody to speak to when he was a younger dad with a high-pressure job working long hours. His time with his son was limited. Looking around for stuff to do on a Saturday morning, he realised there was very little in the way of stuff for dads to do with other dads, which only compounded his feeling of isolation during a time when he had lost his own dad. Stuff needed to change, and he began blogging about the subject, and after that started Dadless Soul as a group to bring together all types of dads in events specifically designed for dads and their kids. The concept grew, and Dadless Soul is now regarded as the top organisation on the South Coast for bringing dads and their kids together at the same time as overcoming social isolation that dads go through. Dan's a sought-after writer and contributor to a number of publications on the subject of dads, having worked widely in the music industry for a number of years, and he blends this love of music with the Dadless Soul experience and his events, Top Rockin' Beats. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you will be in amazing company. And now to my conversation with Dan Flanagan. Dan, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Hello, nice to be here.
It's a pleasure having you here, sir. I'm looking forward to our conversation this evening, actually, because like I said to you just as we were just off air, I've heard of Dadless Soul over the last kind of year to 18 months, and finally we have made contact and actually got into some dialogue and decided to put down a conversation. So I'm looking forward to finally finding out a bit about what you guys do and a bit more about Dan Flanagan. So for guys that are listening in or watching this, who is Dan Flanagan and what do you do?
What do I do? Yeah, good. I am 46 and a half. I live in the seaside in West Sussex, a lovely place called Worthing. I'm a dad of a very, very, very active nine-year-old boy that I co-parent. During the day, I work for a business change consultancy. And for the last maybe 5 years, I set up a non-profit called Dad of Soul, which aims to help dads primarily with social isolation and loneliness. Didn't start out like that whatsoever. I wanted something to do on a Saturday with my son that didn't involve standing in the park on my own or going to soft play, looking at a mobile phone. And I thought there must be something more. And it ended up creating it because it didn't exist. And now we are an international network of dads trying to be better people, have more in-depth conversations, still have a laugh, you know, to a sense, but through the, we have three sort of focuses, which is art, technology, and music. Mm-hmm. So that's how I start my conversations, genuinely speaking. And we put on a range of dad and child friendly play dates, primarily around Sussex. And that could be anything from 3D print to having a stand up comedian coming in and doing dads versus kids comedy writing. We've had rap battles with Rag and Bone Man's charities. Couple of weeks' time, because we are finally out of lockdown, we've got dads versus kids Nerf Wars and Bushcraft. The session after that is Punch and Judy and Street Art. And yeah, the idea, we bring all the dads together on a Saturday afternoon, vastly different backgrounds. Really, you know, when you say it's a dad's organisation, people automatically think you dress up as a Batman and stand outside the Houses of Parliament rallying against women. And it really isn't that like that. It's just,
I've interviewed them as well previously.
There's a lot of struggles there. I agree. But we hit things, you know, a very different way. You know, art is about community building and sparking conversation. So, that takes up a lot of the spare time that I have. And say I'm a co-parent of a very busy nine-year-old. So essentially, I hang around on football grounds watching him play, and that's my life, really.
And how was Dad's Soul actually kind of born? What was the kind of the kind of catalyst for it for you in terms of your kind of personal circumstances and what brought it about?
Right. Long story short. Okay. So I am 40-something years old. I'm a senior analyst for an international media agency. I'm commuting all the time. And I have my young son. So I'd get home very late at night. If I was lucky, I could put him to bed. And even then, I was probably on my phone answering client emails because that was my priority. And then coming on a Saturday, I'd have him because that's a traditional day. And I didn't know what to do with him. And he didn't really know me because he'd spent all week, you know, with his mum or at nursery. I thought I was doing the best for the family because I am a man. So therefore, I provide, I go out and hunt and make sure a roof over the head. Then I had a series of things happening. My own dad passed away, which had a profound effect on me because I did nothing about it. I ignored it for about 6 months because, again, I'm a bloke and I'm not going to have those conversations. But it was quite sort of profound, because my dad actually had custody of me and my three sisters on his own when we were growing up. So there was a very unique relationship, and I saw firsthand the struggles that he went through, because fortunately now things are changing for us dads, but back in the 70s and 80s that it just wasn't. There were the odd single parent organization, but that was normally for women that voted for CND and wore dungarees. Lovely girls, but you know, my dad went to Oxford and was an architect. We couldn't have gone there. When he passed, it sort of brought a load of stuff up, and it made me really ill. I got chicken pox for the second time, courtesy of my lad, and it was through that I got confined to barracks, and I realised I actually played with my son more because I couldn't leave the house than I had done in mumps. And it was like, he really loved it. And I thought, right, something's got to change. So I ended up quitting that job and thought, I'm going to have a 3-month sabbatical. I'm just going to take stock. I don't enjoy this job. I'm sacrificing too many important things because of this job. I just need to take a break. And fortunately, the universe was with me. My background was digital and PR, so I've been doing it for 20-odd years in record labels and big brands. So I knew I could always get work. I had 3 months off, but within sort of 2 weeks of golf, I got contacted by a music promoter. Oh, the other thing to say was I'd started blogging while I was commuting, just about being, a young dad, but a dad, because there was nothing out there for us, nothing that resonated. Mm. It was all about how to support your partner through breastfeeding. Where do I come into this? Purely selfishly, but there just wasn't. Mm. The blog was called Don't Believe the Hype. Through that, it kind of spiraled relatively quickly over a series of months and became an online magazine for dads. It had 18 different writers from around the UK. It's kind of, 20, 30-odd years ago, there was this generation of new lad. I hate the term, but if you're of a certain generation, you would have read, the NME, you would have read FHM, all of these different magazines, but there was nothing for us. The hype became that. Anyway, so I was a couple of weeks into my sabbatical, I got contacted by a music promoter, said, did I want to do some PR for them? That led me to interviewing people like the Fun Loving Criminals and Ocean Colour Scene and getting paid. So it's like, right, midlife crisis, become a rock journalist. I'll have some of this. Thank you very much. Then 3 months became 6 months. And so the universe just seemed to have these champion me. I had this really weird feeling one day. I think it was like a Tuesday, walking past this art centre in Worthing. And I thought, I'm going to go in there for a coffee because, I'm not forced into going to the office anymore. Went in there, saw this guy in the corner, looked really lonely. Well, I'm going to go and talk to him. We had a great conversation anyway. He told me about his plans to revolutionise the foster care world and that the system was broken. And the more he was telling me, I was like, dude, you really need to meet my wife. She feels exactly the same way. I did. I introduced him. He ended up giving my wife her dream job, which allowed her to go back to work full time, which allowed me to do, childcare. So my 3 months became 6 months. Became 5 years. From there, things spiraled. I started getting approached by brands that wanted to target dads, and some of the PR agencies for brands. But basically, their approaches were really cheesy, really, really horrible. So, oh, you're a dad, you must dance, and you can't dance, and therefore I'm going to try and get you into a pair of crap trainers. I was like, no, I can do this better myself. So I created the world's first agency of dad, which was a specialist PR and content agency. And we were getting briefs from Disney, Marvel, Pretty Green, Liam Gallagher's label. It was pretty cool. Things continued to develop. But around that time also, I'd moved to a new town, so I didn't really know anybody. Mm-hmm. We're about 15 miles away from Worthing. So what's kind of happened is a load of young families that go from London to Brighton and then go to the suburbs. I was bored and I was lonely, and I thought, right, I need some friends. I came up with the idea of something called Top Rocking Beats, which is afternoon raves. So I hired out this art centre, phoned some pals that were DJs, brought in some soft play, and just thought, right, all these people that can't go out in the evenings, we can just start going out in the afternoon and partaking the kids. Did one event on Father's Day. Actually, yeah, it'll be Father's Day 2016. 450 people turned up. Right, it went absolutely nuts. That sort of spiraled. I ended up doing about 30 of these events around Sussex. We took over museums, art galleries. We did a huge one on New Year's Eve where we do the midnight countdown 12 hours early. So we were the first place in the UK to see midnight in. So you put kids on the shoulders, have wicked DJs. We had a Wurlitzer organ come through the stage. Met this lovely old lady called Vera Chalmers. She was 97. She came raving with us. She became the world's oldest ever DJ. Anyway, so that became my full-time job, working at developing this agency, putting on the raves, which sounds glorious. But then underneath all that, I'm still quite lonely. Mm. You know, I'm still struggling with fatherhood. And I thought, I've got to do something. I've got all of this DJ equipment and activities from the raves. What happens if I just hire somewhere out on a Saturday morning and put a flag in the ground, say anybody want to come? Actually, going back a couple of months, something strange happened. So this is another thing about the universe being on my side. I went to this, best way to describe it is for business hippies, an entrepreneurs weekend in the middle of, no, actually it was down your neck of the woods. Actually, it was 150 people, sort of purpose-driven. And I'd been very much from the mentality of you're in business, you make a profit. But this weekend really changed me and understood about the power of community. So I said, right, I'm getting 400, 500 people at these raves. What if I put them to work? So it's like, right, if each one of those brings a tin of beans, suddenly I can feed a lot of families. So we came to get some sort of social change. At that event, I met somebody on the dance floor, got talking to him. He invited me out to Geneva, where he lived, in to do a hothouse thing in the mountains for a week. When I there, planned out this sort of revolution that I was trying to do. I said, look, I'm bloody terrible. I've got all these great ideas. But I'm useless at numbers. He said, you want to meet my business partner? He introduced me to his business partner. He then became my business partner. And when I approached him about doing Dadless, he said, you can have our offices. So I got this very swanky office in Brighton. We took it over. So with beatbox battles, we've got crafting all over their lovely boardroom. But the profound thing was, I think there was like 14 or 15 dads there, a load of kids. None of them really knew each other, right? But in there, they were just talking. There was no mobile friends. Now, if you think, when you go to your kids' parties and stuff like that, you'll see the dads in the corner. The mums are over there and we're awkwardly around the edges, trying to make conversation.
Yeah, dying for it to finish.
Yeah, and it wasn't. It was like, this is something. I don't know what this actually is, but this is something. So, out of there, again, Dad the Soul sort of spiraled into pre-lockdown. We had 7 clubs running in different locations. The idea is you get the dads and kids in with a different theme. So rather than having to go to a rubbish church hall and drink weak orange squash while the kids ran on soft play, who do I know? Who can bring something to the party? So it's like DJ workshops, rap battles, things that the dads can come along and actually take part in. So one thing we did was one of our dads was a film director. He came in and showed us how to make films on our mobile phones. It was like, next time it's a rainy Sunday afternoon, rather than going, right, kids, I'm sticking you in front of the screen. So, no, we're making a film. You're in charge of special effects. You're in charge of makeup. We're in charge of storyboard. And it sort of gave the dads confidence and the skills to be able to up their dad game.
Yeah.
And out of all of this beautiful, you know, chaos and fun, the dads then started making friends. They could organise play dates of their own. But what I hadn't realised at the time is the dads really started opening up. And, you know, even from things like, you know, I couldn't get sports day off this week because my boss is a prick and I feel really guilty about it. Or, you know, my marriage is in crisis. Or we had one dad, big rugby dude, that came in and he was really sort of scared because his little boy wanted to dress like a princess. And it's like, is that okay? I don't know. And it's like, well, of course it is, on the condition that you dress up as a princess as well. Sit yourself in a corner. We're all having a tea party. you know, we break all of these taboos and these conversations. So, yeah, there's been a wild sort of
roller coaster.
Yeah, five years of having absolutely no business plan, just thinking that will be a good idea, finding great people, putting them together and just doing it. Like we were talking about before, you know, when we were off air, it's about finding my tribe. I didn't have one, but I knew they must be out there. So it was just like, right, I want to go raving in the afternoon. Right. Somebody else might want to do that with me. So brings us to sort of...
It's interesting as well because you're combining doing cool activities with also kids being able to laugh. Kids love laughing at their parents, like doing stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'll typically walk into the kitchen when my wife's doing something and start doing silly stuff. And it's always, I always get told, they're just about to go to bed. Why do you have to wind them up just before bedtime or whatever? And I don't do this all the time. But yeah, it's generally sort of generally you get involved with the silly stuff and they just like, they find it absolutely hilarious sort of thing. Cause it's like, it's, you know, it's a bit of fun. And what's interesting is I interviewed a lady called Anna Machin and she's written the book Life of Dad. And she is a evolutionary anthropologist from Oxford University. And in actual fact, when you're doing kind of rough play and mucking around with your, and wrestling and all that kind of stuff, the beta endorphin is a pair bonding chemical that's released in your body that accelerates the kind of pair bonding process between dads and their kids. And it's an evolutionary quirk of Western dads, because Western dads are generally at work during the day, so they have a short period of time in which to bond in the evenings. So evolution has equipped us with a way in which to do that sort of thing. It's like the evolutionary version of speed dating sort of thing. So
it makes perfect sense. The ability to get on your hands and knees and have that eye to eye contact from a foundation point of view, we kind of, as we got, we lose the ability to play. You know, I'd forgotten how to build a camp, but I knew dads, you know, you'd see your mates doing it and go, that's really, really good. And I want to know how to do it. So it's like, you come here, I'll show you how to DJ. You show me how to do that. Bill over there is really good. He's an engineer. So he's going to show us how to do some really, you know, kick-ass Lego. And if everybody throws something into that tribe melting pot, then suddenly you've all got your own skills and you're making friends and the kids are making friends. You know, a lot of our dads are co-parents. So the kids even live in different towns. So not only is it hard because their school friends and maybe their traditional social groups aren't available, but now they can have their Saturday bad, their Saturday pals as well. So, yeah, it's all of these different activities. It sparks a conversation in the dads, because if it's just about the kids, it would be boring. It would be back to sitting in a library doing the wheels on the bus for the 80th time, dreading it. But as actually, yeah, we can take the mickey out of each other. We can learn some new skills. Suddenly the kids maybe see their dads in a different light. It will spark a different conversation.
Yeah, and I think the thing is as well is the value of that as well is that, like we were talking about before we hit the record button on this discussion, is that, you know, going back thousands of years in a tribe, you would have people showing each other how to do stuff. So it might be that, you know, one guy knows how to skin an animal, one guy knows how to spear an animal, you know, and one guy knows how to build a camp that's watertight, the other guy doesn't. And it's kind of, and it's exactly the same principle. It plays to this, it plays to our kind of evolutionary background in a different kind of way. And I think that, like we were saying, it's men where they've kind of lost their tribes. They've lost this kind of ability. It's what I call the lone wolf fallacy, and people that have listened to the podcast will know what I'm going to say now. But it's this, as men, we've looked at guys like James Bond and Indiana Jones, and they do it all by themselves. They don't need any help from anyone else. They do it all by themselves. But in actual fact, most of the people that I've interviewed on this podcast, particularly military guys, you know, they see the value of working in tight units where you all each have each other's back, and there is a kind of brotherhood, there's camaraderie, there is unity, and that's how we operate at our best, not kind of by ourselves. And one of the things I think is really valuable for men and dads to learn is that asking for help is a strength rather than a weakness. It depends how you term success, but whether it be monetary or not, most of the most successful people in the world are the people that are the most well advised. They ask for help. They're not operating in isolation. They will have big teams of people around them supporting them in what they're doing.
Yeah, but you have to find those teams, don't you? Because as you get older, your social groups become smaller, and especially for dads, it tends to be that you keep on touch with people on Facebook, and that's it. Your social life revolves around the kids, so that means your social life revolves around the partners of the people that your wife has met on the school run traditionally. Okay, because it's just easy. The kids get to play. There's something to do in the calendar. It's fine, which is wonderful. Or, you know, if you're lucky to meet people at NCT. Right? What happens if you can't afford NCT? Or, you know, we went to NCT once and then my son was premature and turned up a couple of days, you know, later. We moved to Nichan. There were some lovely people here, but they weren't necessarily, you know, the people that were going to become really close friends of mine.
Yeah.
So we need that tribe mentality. But where do you go? Because society isn't set up to signpost. Yeah, I know, because I was looking for it. There must be, I cannot be the weird one on my own feeling like this. I probably was, but, you know, I was able to admit it and say, you know, I'd actually like some friends. I'd like to be able to not just, you know, go out for a pint because I don't really drink. I don't really do football. So all of those traditional activities weren't open to me. So I was like, well, where's the, you know, the music and the art people, or somebody who can have a, you know, a genuine conversation about the purpose-led economy? Yeah, they must be somewhere.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you touch upon a really good point there, because what happens, you know, my experience was that we met people through, we were fortunate in that the town where we lived, Edenbridge in Kent, that at the time had quite a thriving children's centre, which my wife benefited from, and we met people at I don't know what they call it, the prenatal classes or whatever they're called. Yep. So we met some people there, and then we sort of met some people at the primary school and stuff. And I think, but then you realise that you might meet some people that are primary school parents, but then it falls off a cliff when you get to secondary school, because you don't really mix with the secondary school parents unless you know them already from primary school. And what we found with primary schools is often, you know, there'll be, like you say, there might be a dad's WhatsApp group that starts, sort of thing. But invariably that revolves around going and getting absolutely smashed in the local town, which is okay now and again. But like you say, the problem is if you don't drink, or if you just don't want to feel rough for the rest of the weekend, or, you know, like, also guys, as they're getting a bit older, you know, there may be mental health issues where they don't want to drink or do drugs. There may be family health problems, which means that they have a condition where they, it's not a good idea. So all of a sudden you've got this kind of no man's land where guys, if you don't want to get rat ass, and if you don't want it all to revolve around drink, then you're kind of in the abyss a little bit in terms of what you can physically do. There's a guy I interviewed a few episodes back called Billy Baker. You'd really dig his book. It's called We Need to Hang Out, and he did like a sort of a loose sort of study. You know, he's editor at the Boston, his newspaper in Boston, said to him, I want you to write about loneliness in men. And he was like, what, am I the loser that's got to write this book about loneliness in men? And he went on this kind of voyage of discovery. But one of the things he said to me was that it's very difficult getting guys to kind of congregate and kind of hang out. And what I've noticed with the lockdown as well is that we've all become homeboys. We're, you know, it's quite easy to be in front of Netflix and it's quite easy to sit at home. So trying to get people out, it's like trying to get crabs out from underneath caves in the rock pool sort of thing at the minute, because guys have got used to being in these safe spaces at home.
I tell you what's kind of profound. We did a study of our members, and it was 73% of them said they felt socially isolated or lonely. Now, going back, you know, if you walk into a pub and there's a group of fellas there, hello, fellas, stick your hand up if you're lonely and you want to come over here and talk about your problems. Nobody is going anywhere near you.
No.
But 73% of those people, right, that there's issues. And the darker side of that is, what was it? There's 96 men under the age of 45 being lost to suicide each week in this country. It is the biggest killer of young men. Out strokes, you know, cancer, everything. And it's because those blokes can't talk.
Mm.
You know, they don't have those facilities. So being able to congregate in a safe space, and, you know, it's all about, you know, being vulnerable, which I still feel uncomfortable, you know, doing. But what I found is that if you start, you get almost like giving somebody a ticket. Mm. So with Dad LaSalle, I'll get, you know, we were talking off air about, you know, social collateral. There is no money in Dad LaSalle. It's a non-profit. Basically, I spend 30 hours a week volunteering. But what I'll do is I'll get a message from somebody completely out of the blue that is in need, or this has helped, or something like that. And I go, yeah, that's, you know, you've made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so incredibly powerful, seeing, actually, if we didn't exist, where would that fella go? And the dark side of that is they can go completely the other way, you know, and it's that needs to stop, and we need to keep challenging.
Yeah, and I think
that behaviour.
It's really funny. I was talking to someone about this today, and it was on Twitter in relation to like a relationship topic, and they were talking about something along the lines of men being able to sort of talk about how they feel in relationships, particularly in relationships. And my kind of point to him was that on the one hand, society is saying, you know, men are this, men are that, men can't be trusted, and men don't have a right to say how they think about things. And then those very same people in the next breath are going, oh, it's just so terrible that all these men are committing suicide. And you're like, well, hang on a minute. On the one hand, you're ostracizing guys and demonizing men and boys and for being too male and for being too masculine. And then on the other hand, you're turning around and going, well, hang on, why are these guys committing suicide? Or you're just like, hang on a minute. What do you want men to be? Do you want them to be, you know, the modern metrosexual male, or do you want them to be, you know, stereotypically kind of traditional alpha masculine? Or because my deal is, you be who you want to be. Whoever you feel comfortable with being, you be who you want to be. But the problem is, I think guys are, they're being pulled from pillar to post at the minute in terms of what, you know, what Vogue magazine says they should be, what Marie Claire says they should be, what different kind of powers that are flexing their muscles within the social justice movement say they should be. And the problem is for guys, they're like, yeah, well, hang on a minute, who do I want to be? Because no one's really asked me who I want to be.
And but it's also, don't you mean, there's your role models as well.
Yeah.
Because you might have had a very different relationship with, you know, your dad, or that the men around you. I was talking, we do online sessions on a Thursday night, but and we had this wonderful comedian called Kevin Day. And he was telling us about his dad and the fact that, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you just wouldn't see a bloke change a nappy or push a pram. Just no, absolutely, you know, he'd be just sort of shamed out of the village. But now we see that as, you know, commonplace, and it almost, it's come full circle that you would frown against seeing one of your mates that didn't change a nappy or, you know, maybe wear a baby harness and something like that. But it's, if you don't have these role models or points of reference to go, you're getting bombarded by all of this different messaging, and there's nothing to cling to because, like you said, you're being pulled this way and that. And that's another thing to go, I'm not good enough because I can't be there and I can't do this and I can't do that. And, you know, this is where the, you know, self-doubt comes in, the frustration that you're simply not good enough.
Yeah.
That leads to your negative, you know, downing too many pints at the pub and being grumpy, or, you know, domestic violence, all of these horrible things. But
so you're looking for an external solution to an internal problem, and the internal problem is being cool with who you are and what you are. And one of the things that kind of doesn't gripe me, in the sense I can see the road to something is paved with good intentions, but like I see a lot of slogans around we need to talk and it's good to talk and all the rest of it and stuff. But one thing I pointed out to someone recently was, that's great if you're, you know, if you're having a shit day at work, or if you're you know, you're having some relationship problems or whatever, what I would call kind of stuff that you can talk to your friends and family about. But if you're in a real dark place with depression or anxiety or, you know, intrusive thoughts or whatever and stuff, you're not going to speak to your wife about that. And you're probably not going to speak to your mates about it, because at the back of your mind, you're going to be thinking, if I told people this, for a very good chance, if they're not qualified to understand what I'm talking about, that I could end up getting cut off to the loony bin. And so, you know, I was,
or they're part of the problem.
Yeah. And so I was talking to someone recently, and I said, look, if someone's like Jordan Peterson talks about people being in a dark place, if someone says to me, I'm in a dark place, they don't need to tell me the specifics. I know exactly what they're talking about, and you can point them in the direction, or you can give them the help of where they should probably start their journey to get help, and you can support them along that way. But I think it's a bit naive of people nowadays to go, it's good to talk, because there is a different levels of mental health problems. And the kind of, I won't say on the lower end of the spectrum, because that's kind of diminishing it, but the stuff that you can talk about and resolve talking to a mate or a friend is not the same as the stuff that you would talk to a professional therapist about, because it's just, and I think what's happening is people have been encouraged to talk, but if you're in a dark place, you're not going to talk to your friends and family about it, which means that you just end up not talking. And that's a surefire way to suicidal ideation. And, you know, if you're going from a dark place to a very, very dark place. And I think the signposting around mental health could be a lot better. If that makes any sense, as to where for what things, you know what I mean?
Gents, I'm going to jump in here quite quickly. Now, if you're a regular listener, you may or may not know that this year I formed an exclusive brotherhood of dads called the Dad Circle. And some of the men who have joined are making some remarkable changes to their lives, their physical health, mental health, and relationships, accomplishing things that they didn't think were possible for them before joining. As a member, you get access to a proven system of self-improvement, daily accountability check-ins to keep you on track, and weekly team calls, monthly topics and challenges. Not to mention a bunch of other dads encouraging you and cheering you along the way. Now, if this sounds like something that you would benefit from and you want to check it out, then you can do so over at www.thedadcircle.com/join. That's thedadcircle.com/join. If you're driving right now or doing something, do a pause, rewind a few seconds and jot the link down. Then go and check it out. If that wasn't enough, right now you can try it out for £1. That's just £1 for your first 7 days. I can't say fairer than that. £1 could be the best investment you ever make. So try it out today.
But it's different for everybody. You know, there was the, what was it, the Project 84, which was a couple of years ago run by an amazing organization called Calm, which is a campaign against living miserably.
Mm-hmm.
They did Project 84, and basically they got mannequins, or they made mannequins of the 84 men that had been lost that week, and they invited the families of people that lost it, and they dressed them up in their clothes, and they put them on the top of TV centre in London. I urge people to go and look at this campaign. It's phenomenal. He reached the House of Commons, and it really started the conversation. So Calm is a phenomenal organisation, but there is issues, and you can't just say, if you've got that problem, you go over there. If you've got that problem, because we're blokes, we tend to think quite laterally, and also the problem with being able to talk is we want to try and fix things. Oh, fine, okay, you like that, mate. Well, go over there. And it isn't like that. Sometimes you just need those people to listen. But your friends or your family may actually be part of your issue. Mm-hmm. They go, oh, I'm feeling really lonely. Well, I'm your mate. How can you be lonely? Or, I'm your wife. And you can't. And that's where, we've had some of these, conversations come out in Dad LaSalle, in the really, random thing. One minute we'll be, taking the piss about who's the greatest band, since the Stone Roses. And then somebody starts opening up about their teenage girl's periods or she's self-harming, And I don't know how, but it's there. But I still, we were just a bunch of, bloke volunteers. There does need to be seriously, government resources put into the signposting. However, let's say not everybody's problem is easily fixed, and it can't be you got tennis elbow, right, go and see the doctor. That's fine. When you're dealing with your noggin, it's a very different story, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that comes out of a lot of the discussions I've had, I interviewed a guy called Dan Rowe, who's a facilitator at Andy's Man Club, which is, again, they started out in the sort of northern heartlands, but they're expanding out into a number of different cities. But one of the things that me and Dan discussed was this kind of, this is how men can change their relationship with thought. And one of the things that I really encourage most guys to do is to just start on you don't have to become a master's expert in psychology, but just to acquaint yourself with the nuances as to how the human brain works and what your mind does and how it processes thought and emotion and stuff and that. Because you're not taught any of this stuff at school. It's, you're feeling a bit down, just go and get smashed on a Friday night. That'll make you feel better. Problem is, you keep doing that, and then by the time you get to your 30s and 40s, if that's your default every time life doesn't go to plan, and also your hangovers last about 3 or 4 days the older you get. So you don't feel better, you feel worse the older you get. And it's changing this kind of sort of relationship with thought. But it's interesting what you said about when you said about talking to friends and family, I interviewed a guy called Andrew Marshall, and he, in terms of talking to your wife, he said, you're not going to speak to your wife about things, because what would be the logical reaction if you spoke to your wife about a problem? she would assume that it's something she's done, when in actual fact, it could be nothing to do with
her.
So there are inherent issues with dealing some of these issues within the family unit, because also some relatives are confidential in the sense that they will treat a conversation of confidence with other family dynamics. You might tell your brother, and all of a sudden it's right the way around your family that you're in a really bad place. And you're like, hang on a minute, I didn't want that to go all the way around the family. So, it's interesting how it kind of sort of plays out. In terms of like the guys in terms of how you see sort of social isolation, we've delved into how it kind of typically occurs and the circumstances in which it occurs. What do you think some of the kind of practical things that, I mean, you obviously started to reach out to other guys to get, to kind of say, look, I'm setting this thing up. Do you want to roll along and check it out? And it kind of grew from there. But for the average guy, what do you think are some of the sort of core things that they could actually, because I'm going to just put myself in the position of someone that's reaching out to someone else. It's kind of like walking up to a girl in a bar when you're younger. I say when you're younger, but if you're newly single and listening to this and you're a dad, you might be like, hang on a minute, I'm going to try walking up to someone in a bar in the next few months. What do you mean? Yeah. You're insulting me. What I mean is that I think when you're walking up to another guy to say, hey, and strike up a conversation, it's a very unnatural thing for fellas to do. And I think rejection is always the thing at the back of your mind that...
Gotcha, yeah.
Shit, they're going to say no, and they're going to say, what are you talking to me for, you weirdo? Go away.
Yeah. It's terrifying because it is that sense of rejection. I don't think there was a particular secret. A strange thing happened a couple of weeks ago. I went out for a couple of shandies with two very old friends, one guy that I've known since we were 11, and another guy I've known for about 10 years, and we hardly ever get together. We hardly ever go to the pub, and we went post-lockdown, probably a year and a half since we'd seen each other. And I was telling them about this sort of podcast documentary I'm working on, where I'm interviewing artists about their relationships with dad. And one of them, they're both very talented artists, but one guy in particular, I said, I really want to, interview you about your dad, if you don't mind. And he said, yeah, it's a bit tricky because, my dad's just washed his hands of me. Right. And it was like, boom. The next hour and a half, I sat around the table with two blokes I've known for donkey's years discussing things that we normally would never go near. So I think if you are, can be brave enough, it's to ask a different question rather than going, or what I started doing is, how are you? We go, yeah, I'm all right. Okay. Really? Is it, what are your woes and what are your foes? And I say, this is what wakes me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have to go all, hearts and flowers and hugging and go, I'm still struggling with co-parenting, for example. And that's a bit of a challenge, or depending on who I am, I think, I'm doing all this building my new business and I've got my day job as well. And I'm finding that a bit of a challenge. Have you got any suggestions? And sort of almost, I suppose, asking them for help or a level of expertise that they can either go, you can do this, this and this. It puts you in a bit more of a comfortable position because you're seeking knowledge, and people actually respond usually quite well to being asked for help rather than going, you bear your soul to me. No, absolutely. But it's a counterbalance to that. So once they've, done, they've helped you, you will find that they tend to open up as well. Because I can't stand small talk. I get bored very easily and my mind dries up. Yeah, I don't drive. I haven't seen the match and I'm probably just going to hang out in the toilet now till this is all over. It's great.
And some guys are seriously hard work as well with small talk. So like, it's like,
yeah,
been up to anything? Yeah. So, and no. I think it's finding those common denominators, isn't it? Because I often find, like, I was talking to one of the mums at the primary school the other day, and I know her husband, but not that well. And she starts saying, she starts talking about the fact he's got into kind of, you know where Weirwood Reservoir is, don't you? Because you used to be in this neck of the woods, Dan. So, and she mentions, he's getting into his paddleboarding down at Weirwood. So you sort of get chatting, and he's like, it's quite a good social down there and stuff. So all of us, it's also finding common denominators, isn't it? Like what do you do at weekends and whatever and stuff? Well, I used to be into this, but I've got out of it, but I really want to get back into it. And that could be fishing. That could be,
yeah,
I don't know, rock climbing. It could be anything. I'm giving sort of just, you know, stereotypical examples, or actually non-stereotypical examples.
No, you're right.
But it's getting that common ground, isn't it? Where you actually sort of say, well, what are you into? Like the guy that does our plumbing and stuff and that, and has done some bits for us. I get chatting to him and I find that, you know, we both fish, and I found out that he's into sea fishing. I've never done sea fishing, and it's just a simple matter of going, I've never done sea fishing. I don't know what I'm doing. Could you take me next time you go? And he says, yeah, it's fine. It's so obvious,
but because of that, it's still there. There's still a social stigma around there going, yeah, can you take me with it? No, you're a weirdo. Please leave me alone. I'm here to sort your taps out. Go away. Or, you know, but like with Dadless Hole, when we did arts, tech and music, they're things I can have a conversation about, or I can say, oh, do you remember this tune? Who were you when you were 16? Or, you know, we're going to do graffiti, or we got some 3D printers and we had some laser cutters in there. You know, it's going, right, okay, if I was going to give you this 3D printer, what would you create? And again, it's about finding those, it's almost like the secret sauce to a conversation. I still struggle with it. I'm lucky, I've got a partner that's a great talker. So, let her go out of social. I'll let her do the rabbit, and I'll just sit in the background. I'm quite happy like that.
Yeah. Did you? You're just waiting for that inevitable. Did you know? Has Dan told you about what he does and whatever and that? And you're just like sitting there, kind of cringing, like, don't embarrass me. Don't embarrass
now
me.
Now I'm on stage, and I go, right. No, but there is a very different Dadless Hole or Danless Hole than there is, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy there with it, you know, with a good book or I love, we've just been away for a couple of days, as we mentioned off air, and I was working out what makes me happy and what I need to do more of. And it's getting lost in London. It's wandering around galleries. I adore going to the Tate Modern. It's almost like my spiritual home, and I can spend all day in there and happily not really talk to more than one person.
Yeah.
That's probably not very healthy, you know, in a community thing, but it's, again, I suppose, finding those things, because I can find a piece of art or a sculpture in there and I'll be so enthusiastic. Then I'll go out and tell loads of other people. Mm. So it would give me the conversation starter,
I suppose. It's letting your brain off the leash. I mean, I think one of the weirdest things that I experienced as a dad was when that first time, I can't remember. I think I dropped them off at a party or something, but I didn't need to be there and it wasn't worth going home. So I thought I might as well just go to the town and get a coffee, kill some time and whatever. And that was the first time I don't know when that kind of happens. Probably, I guess, when they're, you can leave them at about, I guess, 6 or 7, maybe even a bit earlier now. And you sort of sit down, you're like, hang on a minute. So you sit down with your coffee and you stopped buying papers, but you buy a paper anyway, and you sit down and you start reading the paper like your dad would something. Yeah. You're just kind of like, hang on a minute, this is the first time I've had time to kill in however many years and whatever. And I've done the same as you, where I'll take a day. Well, I took a day off of, and I love to go up to sort of, you know, I'll go up to the museum. So I'll get off at South Kensington, maybe go and have some lunch. And there's a Lebanese restaurant on the square there opposite where the Natural History Museum is. Have a nice lunch, because I'm happy with my own company, but then just take time off to. But it's not necessarily, it's not always the actual process of what you're doing. It's the actual, you've not actually got to be anywhere by a certain time. You're not on a time limit. You know, you're not on a stopwatch or anything.
Yeah.
If you want to, like you say, if you want to spend 20 minutes looking at an exhibit in a room in the art gallery, you can spend 20 minutes because you've not got someone saying, I'm bored. Come on, we need to go now, sort of thing. And that's the beauty of that experience for dads, I think.
Another question for you. Your kids are a bit older now, but how did you find arranging play dates when it was down to you? Were you comfortable phoning up other people's wives and saying, let's go and hang out? Or did you not do it? Or were they all organised for you?
Generally, it was mum to mum play dates. I don't think I ever did a dad to mum play date. I think I probably did dad to dad play dates where we went out with other dads, sort of thing and stuff. Mm. But I don't think I ever did a dad with mum play date ever.
It's a very different dynamic as well, isn't it?
Mm.
But it's primarily the play dates are mum to mum. But if you know, more and more men are now, especially over the last 14 months, working from home. So that they're not going to go back to the office. They're going to be around the playground a lot more. And it's like when little Jimmy finishes at 3 o'clock, right, he's not going to come straight home. He's going to want to go down the park with his mate, and you're going to have to go. And
yeah,
I found it, especially, you know, when I co-parent, so I had to almost start organising things on my own. And there was only, you know, a couple of the mums that would come and hang out with me anyway. But yeah, it's another reason that, you know, dadless soul, because what do you do on Saturday? Do you always want to spend the day on your own with the kids? You want them to have some friends, but you don't want it to be socially awkward. So Bertie, of making some pals that you get on with anyway, and then go, you know what, we haven't got a group this week, but I fancy going swimming next week. I love going swimming, but I find having the three kids on my own a real challenge. Right, well, why don't we all go together? You know, but I think more dads actively should do that. I think, you know, my dad's idea of a play date would have been the side room in the pub where they put the Star Wars on, just on loop, and keep chucking cans of Coke through the counter, and that was it.
And I think I was talking to, funny enough, I was talking to someone before about this, and he said the problem, he said, and this is going to become more of a thing with more dads actually being the kind of primary caregiver, and also, like you say, coming off the back of lockdown. But, you know, he was saying to me, he said, the problem is, he's like, if you walk into a church hall, to a kid's party or whatever, and you're the only dad, it's like, everyone looks at you as if you're like an imposter, and you're like,
yeah,
all right, I'm just a kid's dad. I'm not anyone particularly like strange or anything to worry about or whatever. And you might have like the odd one or two mums have a chat with you, but then it's kind of like, nah, this is a sisterhood. If you want to be admitted to the sisterhood, then you're going to have to pass an initiation test.
It's massively, but it's not just the birthday parties. It was all of those mum and toddler groups, as they're traditionally those. So we have loads of conversations where, you know, you would go and you would feel out of place. We had one of our dads that was asked to leave because some of the other husbands found uncomfortable that he was there. I was asked, you know, was I happy that, you know, I was living off my wife's salary? Or the other one, it was, you know, are you here because you're a paedophile? You know,
you're joking.
Seriously, it's so incredibly... Well, I just want to sit on the floor and play with kids and be a bit daft because I've got this, you know, this wonderful opportunity to do so. But that makes you withdraw even more. So, you know, we're going back earlier about, you know, how to walk up to a stranger and start a conversation. If you've had some of those experiences as well, it's just like, no, I'm going there. You know, I'm going to soft play where I can play on my phone. That is my safe space. But it doesn't, you know, open up a conversation for you or your kids, because it breaks my
shocking
heart.
Shocking. I honestly can't believe someone said that to you, Dan. I really can't.
It's really, really common. And the other thing I find it sad and kind of heartbreaking. I used to go to watch my son play football a couple of years ago, and there was a fellow there that used to just bring his work laptop all the time, you know, and he just put, he's buried down in spreadsheets. I thought, yeah, okay, I understand you might be in a pressured environment, but this is an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just shut that thing off. Mm. And maybe don't shout abuse, you know, but just watch your kid, because at the end of it, they're going to go, how did I do? He didn't know. And mm. It wasn't my place to say, but
I've seen a similar thing happen at sports days. In fact, I remember vividly a sports day at my eldest's when she was still at primary school. And there was a dad there, and he was a bit more modern than I am. So he had AirPods, I think they're called. Mm. But he was walking around with his AirPod, and he'd be watching the race, and all of a sudden he'd walk away from the kind of the, the touchline. It's not a touchline on the side of the running track, but he'd walk away and you could hear it. He'd hold his finger up to you. So you could see he was obviously, you know, doing a call and stuff and that. And you're just like, is your work that important that you just can't say no and say, right, for this next 3 hours, I'm at my kid's sports day, so I'm uncontactable, sort of thing. But
maybe you feel there is, and the pressure.
Yeah, maybe. And I think this is one of the things. The other things I was going to touch upon with you is this kind of, you've got this work, you know, working long hours and working for difficult or tyrannical bosses who, you know, that kind of plays into the whole difficulty that kind of guys have in actually kind of having the time and the energy to actually kind of, you know, nurture these relationships with other fellas. Because for a lot of, particularly if you're commuting from the, you know, in the southeast into a major city, or it could be Manchester, it could be any city.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be depleted at the end of that day. And like you said, you weren't even reading a bedtime story. So the idea of actually, you know, getting on the blower and organizing something with guys at the weekend is just like, that's just not going to happen. But I think one thing that I see quite a lot as well is what I call parental martyrdom. And this is where, and again, I don't even know whether it's actually a term, but I call it parental martyrdom, which is where one or both parents put the family so much first in their lives that they put themselves kind of last. So typically it'll be mum or dad or both. And what happens eventually is one or both of them ends up burning out. So, because they just can't cope with the kind of stresses of putting the family first. And one of the things I find is a big game changer for guys is actually giving themselves a permission to actually take time out, but also saying to their wives, right, okay, I'm going to make it a priority for me in order to fill my cup and put my oxygen mask on first, as we call it, if you're on a plane. I'm going to make it a priority in my life from this point forward to actually make sure that I have that time by myself or with the guys or doing whatever I'm going to do. But what I will do is, if you want to do the same, I will cover you. So I will look after the kids while you go and have time out as well. And that, combined with going on regular date nights and having time out separately and having time out together, those are two of the most nourishing things that parents can do. And it means that you have got more energy and enthusiasm as a parent as well. But people miss
it. I think it's a game changer. You're absolutely spot on. I know from personal experience that stuff can really have detrimental effects in a relationship. And it was, you do less and less of it because of the guilt. If you do go out and, you know, like I said earlier, the hangover has become a lot worse, you say, well, I've just lost 2 days when I could be doing something else. But, you know, maybe every now and again, it's good to absolutely just let off some steam. But you know what? I'm going to take the kids to your mum's for the weekend. Do it. Eat Pringles in your pants or whatever, slobby activity you actually want to do. And again, be able to say, I'm going to do exactly that same for you. And then we're going to do that exactly same thing together. We're both going to sit down and eat Pringles in our pants and do nothing. because if that's what we want to do, that's okay. But yeah, there is, I've never heard the term parental martyrdom before, but I know. Yeah, that can be, you know, actually the end of a relationship because you forget actually who you are as a couple.
Yeah.
And you get that old thing about, you know, staying together for the kids, but it's that in itself is kind of unhealthy.
Well, I think the thing is people become more, typically boy and girl or man and woman get together and they're like, actually, this is great. And what happens is mum sees a little bit less of her friends. Dad sees, they're probably not a mum and dad there. They're boyfriend and girlfriend. So boyfriend and girlfriend see a little bit less of their girlfriends, a little bit less of their boyfriends. And this is kind of probably where the social isolation cycle starts to begin with. So so you sacrifice your relationships in order to kind of make your intimate relationship work. And then as time goes on, you invest a bit more until you realize, hang on a minute, I've not got any of the people around me that I used to have. I'm kind of doing this alone. But also, I've lost pieces of myself. I'm not playing my records anymore. I'm not reading my books anymore. I'm not doing the stuff that made me me. And you're kind of losing yourself. Yeah. And then the problem is combined with with parental martyrdom, it just kind of, in the end, you're just like, hang on a minute, I don't know who my wife is or I don't know who my husband is because they've given away so much themselves. And I think
you don't know who you are, do you? That's the thing.
Yeah. And I think the thing is with social isolation, I think part and parcel of it is marriage is a union of man and women, man and woman, or man and man, or woman and woman, as it is nowadays. Mm. But the problem is I think people mistake that for they mistake it for losing their individuality within the relationship. You're still two separate entities. But I think when it kind of merges into one too much, all of a sudden you lose those, you lose what makes dad, dad and mum. And it's, and I think this whole, it plays into the whole social isolation.
It does. You get older. So you forget, you don't want to go out. You have less money to go out. You have less time to go out. And it's just, I'm working really hard. I'm surviving on 3 hours sleep because you've got toddlers. I don't have the energy to go out. I just don't. And even when I do go out, I've got nothing to bloody talk about because I haven't done anywhere. I smell of poo and sick and I'm bored, you know, because that is my life. And I think it becomes a rapid roller coaster for so many of us. I think we mentioned earlier, you basically get people to give up. Mm. You know, they become a husk of a man. It's not, you know, I used to be somebody, but you're just not, are you? You're a nice fella, but it's like you're an oil, you know, a dish rag that's just been wrung out one too many times. And you've unfortunately lost your spark or whatever. It's kind of heartbreaking to see sometimes as well.
Yeah, I think it is because I think I was talking to someone about this before, and I think the most heartbreaking thing for a man over and above seeing their family or family member in pain or upset or distressed or whatever is actually seeing another man distressed. You know, actually that's probably even worse than seeing a family member distressed, just because I think if you've been on your knees, you can relate to another guy. You can 100% relate to exactly what's going on when another guy's on his knees. And I think there's a really, when you're in that place, it's like a parallel universe that you're living in. And like, you kind of like you go to work in a trance. You come home from work in a trance. You're constantly on high alert for something going wrong or something bad happening or something catastrophic happening, because that's what happens to your brain when you're in that place. And the problem is when you're, someone described it as drowning in a sea of thoughts. And when you're like that, you just can't see clearly, and you need someone to throw you like a life ring or whatever.
Yeah.
you need someone to throw you that with a piece of rope on it and just begin to kind of pull you back to, you know, pull you back to not necessarily reality, but thinking logically and rationally about stuff again, because your brain just gets hijacked, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly what, you know, what happened to me. I remember I was so busy when I was working with this other agency. I asked if I could have a couple of hours once a week to go and pick my son up from nursery. And there was hardly anybody else in the agency that had young kids. So I'd get the dirty looks when I'd leave, you know, even if it was a couple of hours. And I remember, and I'm pretty ashamed of this, but every single week I was late to pick him up because I'd stay to, you know, answer another email, and then I'd have to get a train. I'd end up running off the train and getting a taxi to go and pick him up. And even then, he didn't understand because he's, like, you know, 2 years old and he's used to his mum picking up. So it's kind of, oh, it's you. I don't want to see you. Where's my mum? And it felt, you know, fucking terrible. Mm. But it was only when I was able, you know, to come to the breaking point where I gave that up, and it took my dad dying to read it, actually just, you know, get thrown that life ring to say, just have a little bit of time off or you are going under. And yeah, I think had I continued on that course, I would not be in a good place, put it that way. So I was just very fortunate to get that life ring, as you so vividly put out, to give me some breathing space. And I'm very, very, you know, it was my ex-wife that did it. You know, she's the one who said, you have to stop. You know, we want you around. But if you don't have that, and you all that continue to have that pressure on you, as a provider, or as a man, yeah, that's where the shit happens, and it's a horrible thing.
Dan, it's been a fascinating conversation with you this evening. We've had
likewise,
some
brother,
chuckles and a good laugh going through this, and it's such an interesting. I call it the kind of crossroads of man where we are at the minute, and it's just where a number of different things are kind of coming together to create the kind of perfect storm as to where we are. But I think what's encouraging is there's organisations like Dad LaSalle. There's a number of others throughout the country which we've mentioned during this conversation, and that I think that the guys are actually beginning to kind of band together and reattach themselves to tribes and create their own tribes and begin to kind of squarely look at this stuff in the face, because I think it's I think there's good times ahead. I think in this space, because I think people are kind of talking about it, and I think that someone said to me the other day, they said, so what is it about this dad space and man space, and, you know, and isn't it all about kind of like men being like real? And I was like, well, in actual fact, there's a different, most of the people that are doing this fall somewhere on a spectrum. So some are guys that are really kind of into the alpha stuff, some are guys not, and then you have so you will find kind of who fits what you're into. I said, but the common denominator in all of us is that we want guys to be firing on all cylinders and being able to have the impact on their families and their communities and show up as the best version of themselves as they can. And I said, no matter whether you are the alpha guy or the not so alpha guy who's trying to set up a tribe, or whether it's more personal development, or whether it's kind of more sort of involving children in the activities that you're doing, or whatever you're doing, we're all kind of singing from the same hymn sheet, but in a different way, if that makes any sense. So
no, it certainly does. You're spot on. And I think it's more of these conversations and more of these connections happening. So it's like, oh, you're doing that over there and he's doing that over there. Okay, well, actually, why don't I take a bit of yours and a bit of his and a bit of mine, and we put something together. And that's where the real change can happen. Yeah, I had a thought a couple of years ago, almost to set up some sort of, you know, UK council of all of these different types of organisations, because we're battling, especially in the non-profit world, it's bloody hard to get funding sometimes, and you're running on fumes and volunteer hours. But actually, if you can take the impact you're doing and they're doing, and then go, you know, we are saving the NHS millions of pounds here from a social prescription point of view, because we're not sending people to the doctors to get a bottle of Jollop to spend the next 30 years drugged out of their head. Actually, there's a credible impact that we are having. That can be a hell of a force to be reckoned with, brother, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and there is a ripple effect, because when people, what you typically find, and you probably find this as well, is that when people sort out one area of their lives, the other bits begin to fall into place. So, and you see this with fitness. When people sort their fitness levels out, you know, their relationships improve, and often they'll get a promotion at work, or things begin to happen. And I think it's in any area of these areas, once you begin to kind of get them, it's a bit like when you're at school, you know, you might be crap in all the subjects, but if you're good at one, all of a sudden the others begin to naturally elevate up, because you get a level of confidence and mastery in one, which gives you the confidence in the others. And to use a musical term, which is familiar with you, which will be a musical analogy, which will resonate with you. I always like it when people do duets. Whenever I see people do duets, I'm kind of like, oh, why don't they do duets more often? And why doesn't this person collaborate with this person? They were just crying out. And years and years ago, I think it was on the Brits, Anastasia did a duet with Jamiroquai, and it was absolutely awesome. This is probably going back 20 odd years. But you're just like, whoever thought to put those two together with their voices was just total and utter genius. It was like cheese and onion. Do you know what I mean? It was it's crazy. But I think this is what happens, needs to happen in the dad and man space, really, is kind of guys actually thinking, well, we can do something with this. So I love it. If people want to find out a bit more about you guys, what you do, what is the best way for them to do so, sir?
Three ways. So www.dadlessoul.com. Mm-hmm. We're on the normal socials under @dadlessoul.com. Or I really like receiving emails and then having a phone call with people. So it's just dan@dadlessoul.com. If you've got an idea, I'm not a therapist. You know, I don't have any answers to that, but I can just put you in directions. A nice bunch of fellas that might want to listen, or, you know, come down and have a play date. We live by the beach. It's Nerf Wars. It's bushcraft. And to a decent soundtrack. I'm going to say, what's not to love?
Exactly. Exactly. I like beach and I like music. And so, I'm definitely almost certainly going to be venturing down there.
And you get
point.
you get to shoot kids with Nerf guns, and it's okay, you know? Payback to little buggers. Honestly, we can have a conversation. It would be, thank you for letting me, pipe up these conversations. Are incredibly important to the work that you're doing, and bringing all of these different people together is phenomenal. So, it's a lot of hard work you're doing. So fair play, brother.
Thank you. That's why I said to my previous guest, Geraint Jones, I said, that's why I've kind of got grey hair fitting it in around the day job sort of thing. The last question I'm going to ask you before I send you on your way, Dan, what is it in life that gives you meaning, sir?
Blimey, Charlie. What gives you meaning? I suppose that, I don't know the phrase, that I've done something. You know, I haven't just been an observer. I think you can watch what's happening, or you can make stuff happen. And I like making stuff happen. So that's the thing that will wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. But it would also, the thing that will wake me up at 6 in the morning with a fire in the belly, going, I've got another event, or I've got this, or I've just had this another crazy idea to do a festival. I did something.
I love it. Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm going to now bring our conversation to a close. I wish you all the very best with what you've got coming up with Dad the Soul in the next little while. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, man. So, yeah. All the very best, sir.
You too, brother. Thank you again.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, cheers. Bye-bye.
A big thanks to Dan for joining me. If you want to check him out, Dad the Soul are on Instagram and Facebook. They have a Facebook group for Dad the Soul as well. His website is dadlasoul.com, on which you can find out all about what he does. If anything resonated from this episode, link up with myself or Dan over on Instagram or Facebook. We'd love to hear your thoughts on anything in here which you found particularly relevant to your own situation and that you can relate to in terms of forming friendships with other dads and building your network of support network of other dads that are around you. There's also a video of this interview over on the Guild of Dads YouTube channel, and you can link up with me over on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook using the handle at Guild of Dads. I'm teaching you how to follow a simple system and plan, just like many of my guests, in order to transform all areas of your life so that you can live more purposefully with much greater fulfillment and meaning, at the same time as becoming the man and dad you always wanted to be. It's all in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. You can grab it free over at guildofdads.com/dad. That's capital letters D-A-D. Now, in order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. The fee for this show is that you share it with others so that they may benefit from anything you find useful or interesting. The best bit, you don't have to tell them why you're sharing it with them, but it could be just what they need to hear. Now, if you enjoy what I'm doing at Guild of Dads and you think it's something that's valuable to you and you get value from listening to this podcast, the best thing you can do is go and leave me a review and rating over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. The podcast listenership is growing. The message is growing, but it needs you guys to really get behind doing the reviews and ratings, sharing it with other people and guys and dads that you know. So I want to thank you for listening in each week and getting behind what I'm doing here. Like I say, the podcast is growing. The Facebook group is growing in numbers, and we're having some fascinating discussions over there. So by definitely recommend that you join the Facebook group. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode to share with dads you know. And in the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.